hello, the stars there are going very, very fast. And there's nothing that they can see that's making these stars go fast. So basically they're thinking, oh, there's a black hole there. So basically they're photographing this area and they're hoping to catch the light around the black hole. So in that way, there will be a big ring of light. In the center, there'll be a dark area. There may not be a dark area, but basically that's what they want to do to photograph the black hole. So they were showing this last night, and one of the telescopes is in Antarctica. One is in Spain. One is in Mexico. And there's different areas around the world. I think one is in Arizona. So they hope to hook it up like an array, which they've done before. And a lot of radio telescopes I've seen where they're trying to talk to ET, they get a bunch of dishes lined up together to make the reception area bigger. So that reminded me of one that I already know about, the Deep Space Network, and my favorite project of all time, the Voyager missions. So as we know, the Voyagers have left the solar system. They're in interstellar space. And I believe the strength of the signal they are sending back is like one millionth of the wattage of a refrigerator light bulb. So it's very weak signal, and they couldn't do it with one receptor. So what they do, they hook up, I believe it's three. So I think that's called the Deep Space Network. One is in Canberra, Australia. I believe one is in California, one's in Europe. So they hook it up so that I believe that as the Earth spins, you have a 24-hour coverage. So it's not like you have one telescope in, let's say, Arizona, and then when the Earth rotates out of sight, then for half the day, you can't receive any signal because your telescope's on the other side of the Earth. So I believe they do it so to make sure that you're receiving a signal 24 hours. But I think their combined power, somehow they hook up, so it allows them to receive the signal. So this show last night I was watching, and quite a few scientists spend a lot of money. Very, very complicated programs they have to, computer programs or algorithms they have to do to make this all work, to collect the data and then to massage the data. So one of the problems was when they do decide to try to take the photograph of this black hole, all of the 8 or 10 telescopes, they all have to be favorable weather over top of the telescope. So if any one of the 10 sites has bad weather, then I don't think it's going to work. So I believe one of the telescopes is in the Atacama Desert. And all these telescopes, they look pretty well the same, because I was in the Mauna Kea in Hawaii, and you drive up this dusty road, and it's quite steep, of course, and it's not a typical road like where it's paved or anything. It's just rocks. And then you drive up, and it's very isolated and high up in the mountain. And, of course, that's going to give you the best reception. So it was, I don't have the names of all the 10 telescopes, but there's a lot of scientists working in concert with a very complicated mission is to photograph this black hole. So as the gas goes to go into the black hole, let's say the black hole is sucking in gas, so the gas lines up like a traffic jam, or like maybe you can say if you have a sink full of water and you pull the plug, you see a vortex going in, so the water's spinning around. So the gas is spinning around the black hole, waiting its turn to be devoured. And I thought it produced X-rays when it does that, but I think what they're saying last night, it was radio waves coming from this gas. So anyway, it's X-rays or radio waves, but basically they're trying to photograph it by the combination of all these telescopes. It seems like a very complicated thing. And one of the scientists commented, he was asked by the journalist, is this an important thing? And he'd say, it's monumental. It's incredible. And what it does do is it tests one of a facet of Einstein's theory of general relativity. So great show. I know someone that's not a physicist would probably yawn a lot watching that show, but I can watch science shows to no end. And there was a show about the moon, and I fell asleep, so I'm sorry, but good viewing and very interesting stuff. So Einstein, though, I believe he was like, he didn't like the idea that matter could squish itself to a point. So that's what happens in the black hole. Things get so tight, the gravity is so strong, it squishes everything to an infinitesimally dense point. And if we look at an atom, if we take an example, let's take a stadium, a big stadium. Let's take one of the big stadiums in America, one of the big, let's take the Rose Bowl. So the Rose Bowl, it has a capacity of something like 90,000 people. So it's pretty big. So if you look at an atom, if you take this model, the atom could be a ping pong ball or a tennis ball or something maybe even smaller, a coin. It's at the center of the stadium. It's on the 50-yard line. And that is the atom, or that is the nucleus of the atom. So I believe 99% of the mass of the atom is in this small, small space. So it occupies such a small amount of the space of the atom, and most of the mass is in the center. And on the outside, where all the people are in the stadium, that's where the electrons are moving around. So the electrons have like very small mass, but they occupy the greatest space. So what you do have in an atom is a lot of empty space. And Einstein, I believe, he could have thought this way, but maybe the announcer was saying this last night. He couldn't fathom the thought that matter could squish itself so close together. And I guess if you look at it this way, you have this atom, which is like our sports stadium, the Rose Bowl. And there's so much empty space. There's mostly empty space in an atom. So then there's going to be a lot of space that you can squish things together. But still, I really don't know how. Let's say if you have something that's 10 billion times the mass of the sun. That's a black hole, okay? That's a supermassive black hole in one of our great galaxies somewhere out there. And let's say it has a mass of 10 billion suns. So how can you have 10 billion amounts of matter, or 10 billion suns? So imagine how much matter the sun has, and then you have 10 billion suns. How can you squish that to a point? I guess that's what Einstein was thinking. How can you squish all that matter to an infinitely dense point? So I guess I can see his point. And I do believe the event horizons of the black holes, the distance from the center of the black hole changes in terms of how much mass the black hole has. So I guess the event horizon is maybe changeable in size. So maybe if these scientists do get this picture of this black hole, it will be the event horizon where the gas is circulating and rushing in. And I always thought it was X-rays, but last night I heard radio waves. So it could be radio waves coming to us. But very interesting. I'll look more into that and see what's happening. So, now we're going to talk about galaxies. So, anyway, I'm going to talk about our buddy, the Andromeda Galaxy. So, it's the biggest galaxy in our local group. Our local group maybe has 50 galaxies, something like that. I think Andromeda's the biggest. And our galaxy, the Milky Way, is the second biggest. So, Andromeda's about 2.5 million light years away. And it apparently eats galaxies. So it's hungry. So black holes eat matter. Andromeda eats galaxies. So as we all know, I guess we all know, some physicists know, it's going to, I thought it was 5 billion years. Maybe it's 2 billion years. But now here I'm reading it's 4.5 billion years. So our 5 billion years, it's going to merge with our Milky Way. It's going to be a big galaxy. It's going to be a galaxy merger. And I guess there's all kinds of examples when astronomers look out into space, they can see galaxies that have merged. And so Andromeda, I believe, is rushing towards us. I don't know how fast it is, but it's rushing towards us. And apparently what I remember is that it will rush past us, do a little loop, come back, and then merge. And what's happened is, as I said, in an atom, there's so much empty space. Our nearest neighbor is 4.3 light years away. And stars have a lot of space in between them. I guess in the center of the galaxy, they have less space in between them. But out in the outer boondocks where we are, in the outer reaches of the galaxy, there's a lot of space. So it's possible that that the Andromeda galaxy won't do any damage to our galaxy or to our Earth. And it's also possible no one will be around at that time in 4.5 billion year, million years. Is it million or billion? Billion years. So it's going to, and I think 500 million years is the latest estimate for when the age of the animals will end. The Earth will become so hot, all the water will be gone, and we don't know if we can, if humans will be alive, will we be able to somehow keep water with our technology, with our advanced technology, will we be able to keep somehow pools of water where people can live on. So apparently they say that, this is what my understanding is, my recollection is that in 500 million years, the age of animals will be over. There'll be no more water. All plants and all animal life will die. So unless they figure out somehow who's they, our future generations, but will they mutate themselves to look something like something totally alien to what we are now? The future is going to be interesting. Okay, so I'm going to read about the Andromeda galaxy has been devouring other galaxies since it was a baby, and Earth is next. That's what it says here. And we are devouring, our galaxy is ripping apart the large and small Magellanic Cloud. So it's eating these galaxies. And I'm sure the Milky Way, it's the second biggest, so it's a big bully. It's not as big a bully as Andromeda, but it's probably devoured galaxies before. So this is not the first time that we can hear about galactic cannibalism. So I'm going to read this article again. It's dated yesterday, which is October 2nd. And here on Live Science, it says a day ago, so I assume it's October 2nd. So again, livescience.com. The Andromeda galaxy has been devouring other galaxies since it was a baby. And Earth is Next by Brandon Spector, a senior writer. And the subtitle is, The Cannibal Next Star Has an Even Mightier Appetite Than We Thought. So here's a nice photo of the Andromeda Galaxy. If you've seen the Andromeda Galaxy, raise your hand. Yay, I have. It was wonderful. I went up to Grouse Mountain once, where it's dark, and I saw it. And I saw it around my house. It's so, so cool. It was a eerie feeling to see something too and a half million light years away. So of course the light there that we see now has left Andromeda 2.5 million years ago. And when I did my first show here at UBC, CITR, I did it, I said, okay, there's a supernova that exploded in Andromeda about at the same time as civilization or people or animals were starting on Earth, and it just arrived recently. So I traced the time frame from the light leaving Andromeda to events happening here on Earth until the light reached here. So here we go, Andromeda Galaxy. So again, this is on livescience.com. It's got a nice picture of the galaxy, and it says, the Andromeda Galaxy has been devouring other galaxies since it was a baby, and Earth is next. So you should really check out this website. It has a the end, it has tabs and says space and physics. It's got some interesting stories. So here is the Andromeda Galaxy, a photo. The Milky Way's closest neighbor at about 2.5 million light years away is a crazy cannibal with a thirst for small galaxies. And then there's a bracket that says, then again, so is the Milky Way. And that's true. So I think it's coming at us pretty quick. So hopefully I can find that. Like most big galaxies, the Milky Way is a cold-blooded cannibal with a history of gobbling up smaller galaxies in order to maintain its lovely spiral figure. I didn't know it had to gobble up galaxies in order to maintain its lovely spiral figure, but I guess it's true because, you know what? It says so here. So, but a few billion years from now, our cosmic home could meet its match with an equally hungry neighbor called Andromeda. So I guess Andromeda In our local group, the galaxies are merging, and in galaxies outside of our local group, galaxies are moving away from each other. So I guess what's happening is the correct term is to say that the space in between the galaxies is expanding. So we have an expanding universe. Here they have a nice little story here going on about Planet 9. They think it's 5 times the mass of the Earth, and it's somewhere out there. So we'll see about that. Okay. Andromeda, the nearest large galaxy to ours, is on a crash course to merge with the Milky Way about 4.5 billion years from now. How will the monstrous smash-up change the shapes of the participating galaxies? That's anyone's guess. But given Andromeda's size, astronomers know our neighbor is no slouch when it comes to playing galactic tug-of-war. And according to new research published today, October 2nd, in the journal Nature, Andromeda may have a far more cannibalistic past than scientists give it credit for. So I do recall a few years ago, there was a new finding that Andromeda was bigger than they originally thought, because when they imaged it in another wavelength of light, and they found it reached farther than we thought. So that could have meant also that our Milky Way is bigger than previously thought. So the two galaxies are closer than previously thought. So this could mean that they will merge even earlier than is speculated. So I'll read on. Okay. Using observations from 5 different telescopes. I love that when they use all these telescopes together. It is so cool. The study authors observed the diffuse halo of stars at the edge of Andromeda's orbit and detected at least 2 clusters of stars with distinct trajectories and velocities that didn't seem to mass each other or the rest of the galaxy. So obviously, these velocities or trajectories, they're from something that's getting sucked into Andromeda. But on the estimated ages of these clusters, the team determined they were the remnants of 2 ancient dwarf galaxies that Andromeda had devoured long ago. One gobbled up just a few billion years ago, and the other swallowed up nearly 10 billion years ago. Oh no, they're showing, remember I said there's a picture of an astronaut jumping across the screen, then there's Mona Lisa talking, now they have a manatee looking at me. So I love the manatee. Guess what? I think the manatee is a symbol of the marine life of Florida or something like that. Okay, so what I'm going to do now is I'm thinking about this. Why not go on a break? So when I go on the break, I am going to come back. I'm going to talk about our buddy, our friend who's going to eat us up alive soon, the Andromeda Galaxy. And when I do talk about that, then we'll learn more about that. So right now I'm going to go for a break and play a song, put some IDs on, and then we'll talk. So this is Marco. You are listening to Astro Talk on CITR 101.9.
In front of Gucci in the winter, I seen you with your girls walking in your chinchilla fur. I was laid up in the cool back shader, looking at your face just pure with no makeup. A little bit of MAC lip gloss, hair in a bun, well done. Looking for a ring, I seen none, so I hopped out the coupe and hot the soup is stopping. Introduced like I'm shining, you my destiny. In your diamond cluster, too much just to touch you. Perfume down to your structure. Think I wait till the second.
This is Robin, the program manager at CITR 101.9 FM. You're listening to Astro Talk with Marco, the best astronomy program on the planet.
Put it in your purse and call me. On the telephone, she heard my voice. Tell me to pick her up in my Rolls Royce. If my Rolls Royce is not for ladies, then girl, I'm gonna take you in my Mercedes. If my Mercedes would have full up of the disease, then girl, I'm gonna take you in my Firebird. If my Firebird cannot pass the curve, girl, put your ass and the thumb at your butt.
You're getting closer. My player days is over. Well, maybe not completely, but still in all. Come here, let's see a head on my bed. And let me get between your legs. Lay on your back, take it from the back. Like a bag you're supposed to, I know you like that. Scream, wake the neighbors from their sleep. Grab the sheets with your teeth, wiggle your butt cheeks. For the styles
over your body, lift you up, treat you like a convenience store, stick you up, take you to the balcony, pick you up, so you can look at the city while I'm digging your kitty. Then we drive into the sunset, pull over, get up on the hood, ma, I ain't done yet.
On the telephone, she heard my voice, tell me to pick her up in my Rolls Royce. If my Rolls Royce is not the ladies, then I'm gonna take you in my Mercedes.
You're listening to CITR 101.9, broadcasting from UBC's Point Grey campus, located on the traditional, unceded Coast Salish territory of the Hunkaminam-speaking Musqueam people.
Nisiam, Nisiaya, Thinkum Queen Ansep, Hydra CM, Nisiam, Nisiaya, and the Skakuya, Talib Tin, who Musqueam Mustayo.
Or is your vision getting a little bit hazy? Or, if you're feeling a bit funny, get your friends and listen to CITR 101.9 on AstroTalk with Marco at UBC. Depend on Marco for the latest in astronomy news at CITR's AstroTalk.
Let's do some quick yes or no questions. Are the following things technically possible? Life on other planets, is that theoretically possible?
Yes.
Okay. What about a Schwarzschild wormhole?
Yes.
Okay, what about this? Me going on a date with Charlize Theron?
No.
What, not at all? In no universe?
No.
In none of the infinite universes does that happen?
No.
It's completely beyond the bounds of scientific possibility, is what you're saying?
Yes.
Quick follow-up question. In any of those potential universes, am I the one rejecting her and that's why it doesn't work out?
When you join Balloon Club, we guarantee that you will be able to make a balloon poodle within the first day.
Here at the UBC Ant Club, we just like to talk about ants and compare ant farms. It's really cool.
Paperclip Club is all about, well, paperclips mostly.
At Blah Club, you can blah blah, blah 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 blah.
Explosion!
There's only one club worth joining at UBC, and that's CITR 101.9 FM. We got free tickets to shows, whirly pops, professional help in all types of audio engineering, passes to festivals, crazy parties, live band, swag. All types of crazy people. Our programming manager rides a motorcycle. There's freestyle rapping, Nardwar the Human Serviette, the vinyl and record libraries, Discorder magazine, free studio recording, and it sure beats the hell out of Paperclip Club, which is a thing that I just made up because I work at
CITR.
So come check us out on the floor of the Student Union Building. We got all types of crazy shit for you to do. Or check us out online at www.citr.ca.
Welcome back. This is Marco. You're listening to AstroTalk. And what's playing? Something was playing. Okay. So I guess that's one of the best nicknames of all time. Nardwar the Human Serviette. I guess he can tell me one day if I see him again. Hi, Nardwar. how did he get his nickname, the Human Serviette? So remember, Nardwar questioned Kretschan about pepper, and I think Kretschan said he puts pepper in a steak because the cops pepper sprayed legal protesters. Remember, Kretschan was the guy that promoted one of his MPs without a runoff. That's against the law. So there should be a runoff to see who wins it. He just said this person wins it. So that's illegal. I should have challenged him. Then he'd be in jail. Wouldn't that be great? Okay. Of course, I said this this website here, livescience.com. It's pretty cool. And it says here, 12 strangest objects in the universe. So one is a weirdo universe. Yeah, our own planet represents a tiny fraction of the particular phenomena that could be found lurking throughout the cosmos. And every day, astronomers turn up new surprises. In this gallery, we take a look at some of the most outlandish objects in space. So one of them is mysterious radio signals. Since 2007, there's been ultra-bright radio signals everywhere that only last a few milliseconds. They've been called fast radio bursts, or FRBs, and they appear to be coming from billions of light years away. They're not aliens. Recently, scientists managed to capture a repeating FRB, and the second such signal ever seen, and one that could help them unravel this mystery. So one of the mysteries is nuclear pasta. I'll read on. Haumea has rings. The dwarf planet Haumea, which orbits in the Kuiper Belt out beyond Neptune, is already unusual. It's a strange, elongated shape. Looks like an egg. Two moons and a day that lasts 24 hours, but making it the fastest spinning large object in the solar system. But in 2017, Haumea got even weirder when astronomers watched it pass in front of a star and noticed extremely thin rings orbiting about it, like the result of a collision sometimes in the distant past. Okay, here's one, a moon with a moon, the most bizarre star. It flickers on and off, and it's changed its brightness by 22%. So that's not really so weird. I mean, the strangest things in the universe, you know, I don't think that's so strange. Okay. So anyway, they said it's the strangest things in the universe. Let's look at this story. Fire and fireballs crashed into Chile last week. They weren't meteorites, experts say. Chilean officials are investigating a curious collection of burning objects that fell into part of the countries last week. So great balls of fire from the sky in Chile last week. The mysterious objects, though, were not meteors, according to the news report. The fiery UFOs descended on Dalcahu City on the Chilean island of Chloe on September 25th. The tumbling objects crash-landed in seven locations, setting off fires that were promptly put out by volunteer firefighters. So if there's not meteorites, what are they? I don't know. Okay, so let's go back. Let's finish our story about this Andromeda galaxy. Okay, so says lead study author Dougal McKay, an astronomer at the Australian National University. Andromeda has a much bigger, more complex stellar halo than the Milky Way, which indicates it has cannibalized many more galaxies, possibly larger ones. Knowing what kind of monster our galaxy is up against is useful in finding out the Milky Way's ultimate fate, end quote. So again, I think all our galaxies in our local group are going to eventually merge. And I think that is the fate of galaxies in local groups. They will merge. I don't know if they'll merge with their larger groups. Like, for example, there's the Virgo cluster, the Virgo supercluster. I don't know if those will merge. But basically, our galactic neighborhood, the dwarf galaxies, will merge one day. Okay, in a new study, Mackey and his colleagues focused their observation on 92 clusters of star they had identified in Andromeda. Each of these clusters were located in the galaxy's halo, more than 81,000 light years away from the galactic center, where the unusual movements of shredded galactic remains would be easiest to spot. Andromeda is about 110,000 light years across, where the Milky Way is about 100,000. The researchers estimated the velocities and apparent orbits of 7 and 7 of these clusters, finding two distinct groups, one older cluster swirling perpendicular to the galaxy's disk, and one younger cluster orbiting at about a 90-degree angle to the to the oldsters. The researchers interpreted these groups as the remnants of two ancient merger events that occurred billions of years apart. These findings don't do much to settle the question of who would win a galactic fight, Andromeda or the Milky Way. Fortunately, astronomers have a few million more years to work that one out. So yes, we are going to merge. And I think, as I said, there's mostly, like in an atom, there's mostly empty space in an atom. Oh no, I just saw Bernie Sanders. That ruined my day. I'm seeing all these weird things on the screen, and then I see Bernie Sanders. Okay, so the purpose of this article was what? Andromeda has been devouring galaxies. Well, we knew that, and we know that the Milky Way devours galaxies. So we just reiterated something that everybody knows about. Okay. Now let's talk about our solar system's mysterious Planet Nine. Is it really a grapefruit-sized black hole? It probably isn't a black hole if it exists at all, but two physicists think we should check to see if it's a black hole. Anyway, so I guess they're looking for this mysterious Planet Nine, and they're thinking maybe it's a black hole. Maybe it's a tiny, tiny black hole, a grapefruit-sized black hole. Okay. Two physicists think we should check to see if there's an ancient grapefruit-sized black hole hiding out in our solar system. And that tiny, heavy object might, in fact, take the place of a theoretical planet that some researchers think might be tugging on other objects in our solar system, the so-called Planet Nine. Does that mean there's really a black hole hiding out in the corner of space? No, the researchers said. But they've assembled an argument for its existence that they think is compelling enough to be worth looking into. Somebody has too much time on their hands, I think. Isn't that true? Here's how it goes. Far away in the outer reaches of the solar system, past where Neptune, our most distant planet, orbits, there are a handful of small objects. So here it shows, Planet Nine, way out there somewhere, that behave strangely. These trans-Neptunian objects, TNOs, cluster together in unusual ways. They tend to spin around axes that point toward one broad swath of the sky, away from the larger known planets. Also, critically, the TNOs, so remember, TNO is trans-Neptunian object, orbit in a different plane than the eight known planets. That suggests that something else is tugging on them with its gravity. Okay, do we care? Maybe. It's interesting to read on, give them their due. Some astronomers have looked at the strange pattern and run some calculations and concluded that there must be another planet out there, one that's 10 to 20 times the mass of the Earth. Here in this picture it says 5 times, okay, and following a wonky orbit that carries it many hundred of times Earth distance from the Sun. It's a bizarre theory, usually called Planet Nine, but one that astronomers take seriously. The hunt for Planet Nine has gone on for years, with astronomers using visible light and infrared telescope to scan the outermost parts of the solar system. So says Jakob Scholz, a physicist at Durham University in England, and one of two astronomers behind the idea, and quote, "The thing that we realize is that gravity is the most important thing. It doesn't need to be a planet. The most mundane or maybe the most sane explanation that it's a planet. But as theoretical physicists, we know that early universe cosmology can very readily introduce a range of very interesting new theoretical bodies, one of which is primordial black holes," end quote. Okay, so these are primordial black holes. I guess it makes sense because what we got, it's worth looking into, because what we got is people that have studied like 15, 20 years, they're the biggest brains in the universe, and they're trying to find if there's a little grapefruit-sized black hole. So maybe they could be put to some other use, like, I don't know, some other job. Okay, so primordial black holes are different. Usually, when we talk about black holes, we mean enormous objects formed when giant stars collapse into themselves, trapping their masses in infinitely dense singularities surrounded by giant event horizons from which no light can escape. But some cosmologists believe that in the first moments of the universe, when everything was hot and dense and rushing away from the Big Bang, and no stars had formed yet, black holes were already emerging. So how did they, that's interesting, how did black holes emerge? How could they emerge when there was nothingness there? Or maybe close to nothingness. These primordial ghosts of the universe's creation would have formed when chunks of that early matter were crushed together so tightly that they condensed into singularities. So I think what happened is, I was reading somewhere, yeah, I got a lot of time on my hands too, that if you squish the Earth into the size of a sugar cube, it would form a little black hole. So I guess if something's squished, but that's Earth size, and these are much smaller. Okay. A black hole of that mass wouldn't look like much of anything, Unwin says. Its event horizon would be tiny, about the size of a grapefruit. It's five times the mass of the Earth. Wow, five times the mass of Earth and a little grapefruit. And the size of a bowling ball at 10 times the mass of the Earth. But gravity is gravity. If a primordial black hole found its way into our solar system, that black hole would orbit the sun like a planet would, and it would tug on dwarf planets and asteroids just like the theoretical Planet Nine would. There wouldn't be any way to tell the effects of a planet's gravity, from that of a primordial black hole of the same mass. So they're looking into, these theoretical physicists are looking to see if these little black holes exist. So why don't we play a